Accession number 30095, Reel 5.
I don't know about being feared about the war at all. It never seemed to worry me that we were going to have to go into war.
Did you have any idea about what sort of war it would be when it came and how long it would last?
Well, I wasn't far wrong, I envisaged that that the German bombers would be on their way when they declared war. I was quite sure that was going to happen. My father said the same. He said they'll be on their way when war is declared. So before you can say anything, you'll be bombed. That's why that alarm went off so quickly on the first one. I think I thought just be on the safe side and press the button. No, it wasn't. It was a hoax, wasn't it? It was a mistake. But I think it was an exercise, really, to get people alerted what it's going to be like. But you know, I didn't believe it. I mean, I cycled down to the Ekenes there, my college, as though the Germans were after me. You know, I was like, to get down there quickly. But I wasn't frightened. Funny enough, you know, strange, isn't it? I just knew this. I had to do this. No. No, I didn't think so. I can't ever remember. I mean, a lot of us were all friends, school friends of our own. I never remember any of us fearing the war. I think we knew there was going to be a war. But we all felt that we were going to get bombed. That was the thing. I think that fear put any fear up us more than else, that we were going to get bombed from the air, which if you can't defend ourselves. And that's what we thought. Which of course happened eventually, didn't it? Mass bombing.
Was there then a tension during that first the first few months of the phone?
No, it was very strange because, you know, here was I, an ARP messenger waiting for the raid to carry messages to and from the bomb sites to the services because of communication breaking down. We haven't got radios like we have today in that way. And I was a bit bored, actually. It was very boring, I think, you know. We didn't know very much how our soldiers were getting on abroad until it started to blow up, you know. And the Maginot Line was supposed to be there to save if anything came across, but they bypassed that. So there we are. I don't know whether all other 70-year-olds were like that, but I can't remember feeling any worry about it at all. I thought it was going to be a war, we had to go to war. To defend our country. It didn't matter now, but they said we've got to go to Afghanistan. I wouldn't want to join the army then. I said, well, no, I'm not going to fight out there. I'll go there for a while. Not necessarily in the services, of course. And defend your own country, I think. The spirit of Great Britain was tremendous, really. Before the war, I mean, the spirit was very high. You were glad to be British, and all that sort of thing. And I think that helped a great deal. We were very proud of ourselves. And it seems to be on the way to it at the moment, and it's been a shame, really.
Well, had there been anything in the way of social or political or economic wavering during the 30s, following the depression of the late 20s?
I don't remember very much, Toby, really, because my father was never out of work. He was with the Water Softening Company, involved with them going all over the country with water softening. Always remember, you know, talking about hard water. My mother also worked with a wool firm, a very famous firm, I can't think of them now. She was a demonstrator. They produced wool for sewing and knitting, that sort of thing, and she had her own wool shop as well in Kew. She was a marvellous needle, and that's some of her work there. That's some of her work. She was very clever. In fact, she said she taught the Duchess of Gloucester needlework right at the school, you know, in her younger days. She's a very clever woman, needlework. No, I don't remember the depression. I personally wouldn't worry, because we were at home with parents, you know. But we were never out of work, unemployed. But there was unemployment, obviously. There was unemployment. But I was at Sleaston College in Battersea, and I had no career in mind. I must be honest with you. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. But I just had that leaning towards military. Hence I joined the Sea Scouts and the Sea Scouts, you know. I had that fit, that was me, I don't know what others felt, that was me, but can't say any more than that. I don't remember the Depression really. I think in those days when you're young like that, you don't look at it that way, do you? So the adults have to face all the problems.
And then coming forward a bit to your initial training, had being a member of the Scouts, CN and Land Scouts, been of help much?
Oh yes. I think the Scouts, even the Land Scouts, I think the discipline, I don't know what it's like today, honestly, I can't speak for the Scouts today, but I'm a bit disappointed the way they dress now. You know, beforehand you had dressed all the way down to your shoes, and now they just have a scarf on. They wear old trousers and trainers on, I don't know what, but we certainly were taught discipline, that's the most, and respect. And I think that was the important part of Scouting, I think. And the main thing was discipline and to work together. So it was a great step towards cadets, which was the next stage after, and we actually started doing military training. But I've still in touch with some of my cadets today who have been married and all together. I'm 85 now. And they have been there 60s and 70s. And didn't do it very hard.
And the Marine proper training itself, was that the same as a regular soldier would have gone through, was it?
No. Marine training, I think, must be the strictest training there is. The discipline is absolutely horrific. But once you've done it, you know why. You know, you instant your training is that. Well, there's no question of hesitating at all. An order is an order, it obeys straight away. That's what makes the course sort of smart. And there's tremendous pride. The fact that, you know, it's the finest regiment in the world, and that sticks, you know. But I'm sure my father was armed, my brother-in-law, he was, and so was his brother. They were both army people. And they seemed to, you know, they were very good, they were very disciplined men, and could do anything, really. But the Marines is tough training, has to be, as a commander as well. But I mean, that's what they are, they have to be the cream. Bit of cream, really got to work hard, but it doesn't do any harm.
Was it physically tougher?
Oh yes, yes. That's why I'm so fit now. I mean, do you know I had an aorta valve replacement? It started about, is this all right? It's not boring. I had no illness at all, other than that I had that injury and I had a shrapnel on my leg, which wasn't serious. I've had no illness in all my life, and about 9 years ago I was coming back from the bank and I felt dizzy. And I stood there and I thought, something wrong. So I stayed still for a while and gradually eased up a bit and got back to the office. I thought, what was that? So I went and saw a doctor and he said, I'm referring you to a cardiac specialist. He said, I think you've got, heartbeat, intermittent heartbeat. So I went and saw Dr. Roberts at Queen Mary's, and he said, examine me and so forth. He said, yes, regular, as well, sorry. You've got a regular heartbeat. He said, now that means you must have a pacemaker. He said, when your heart's missing a beat, that's why you felt dizzy. So I said to him, well now, my wife will go on a cruise in a week's time. He said, oh no you're not. He said, cancel it. He said, if you have a heart attack aboard the ship, I said, it's a serious matter. So I cancelled it. Within 3 months, I was at the Royal Romsey. I watched the operation. They put this in for me. In fact, I'm watching on the screen. They just opened up here and they fed the cables into the heart. And then put the pacemaker in. And then they screwed the cables into it. Believable, isn't it? And I was only there for about 3 days. And fine. And every year I have to have a cardiograph. Test, look at it. And he said, each year they said, the aorta valve is beginning to thicken with age. It's not closing properly, therefore the blood is coming out, leaking, and therefore you get a bit dizzy. Last year, they said, I think the time has come to change the bell. I think to do all that. So I said, right, I said, well, okay. I said, so we will start a series of checks now. And I started to faint. I fell over several times. Just I ran across a zebra one day, crossing, and passed out. I just got the other side on. Here we go, down, finished. And I got up too quickly. I got dizzy. That's annoyed me, so I'm quite fit. So they said I hadn't got heart disease, I just had the aortic valve which caused the trouble. So I said, we're going to start putting you into the system. Then he said, they want you to have a vascular test, because he said, we must be sure that your artery is free, because when you have open heart surgery, if you've got trouble here, you could get a stroke. So at the OCC, St. Mary's, Paddington, and the examiner said, yes, you've got a 90% blockage on this side, 80% on this side. But a stroke would have. So we said, now, they have just started putting stents in, but we can't say what the long-term view is. We said, the old-fashioned way to have a 50 years is to open up, get to the artery, close it off, open the artery, clean it up, put it all back again. You have to have that done, which I did on the 19th of January. You can just see the scar now there, it looks dark. They actually gave me the bit they took out. It was like a piece of I can't think of the fruit now. It was long and red, but that long and red, that's it. And so it's a good job we did it. It warned me that you might have after effects, because to get to there, there's all sorts of things going on here, nerves and things. You've got to get all that separated to get to the artery. And they said that sometimes you could have loss of voice, things like that. Anyway, I did lose my voice after about 3 days. The operation was successful, no other problem at all. So he said it may take months to recover, but we'll keep checking, you know, to talk. So then I saw Mr. Moat, who was the surgeon consultant at Bronte. He said, well, I see you're whispering a bit, so you haven't got your voice back. I said, no, it's very trying. I said, why should you do all the phone calls? I couldn't speak on the telephone. I mean, I was still practicing law. So he said, well, I don't think we can do the operation that open heart, he said, because you must be able to cough up and bring up phlegm and so forth. So he said, I think we might have to try a new job. I said, what, the angio, we threw down the angiogram. He said, who knew about this? I saw it in a magazine. I was in the dentist 3 years ago. They did it at Leicester on three old ladies in their 90s. And what they did, they went through the groin like an angiogram, straight through the heart, up to the aorta valve, with a stent on the end of it and a new valve inside it, go bypass the valve, and then the stent they come back with a stent, so the new valve is over the old valve, and the stent stays in. So I said, well, do it. He said, well, you're fit enough, Mr. Rankin. I said, you're very fit for your age, 85. He said, I think it's worth trying. He said, we have to all the... What's name going to come down, because it's America's sponsoring it, this idea, and they have all these specialists coming down to look at it and see it been done. So I had it done. On day one, I was wide awake, felt fine. On day two, I got up, walked around all the wards on the level without any shorts of breath. So I thought, I'll do that again. So around I went, steady walk, you know, no effect at all. I thought I'd try the stairs. I know they're going to make me do the stairs. I went the four flights up and down. Got a little bit stiff on the legs on the last bit, because the legs were a bit weak after being bare so long. And I thought, well, that's fine. So I told them what I'd done. I said, well, I've done it. I'm all right. Day two. Day three, they came and tested me. The physiologist came, and she said, "I know all about you," she said. "Naughty man, you shouldn't do that." And so I said, "No, I want you to do the stairs." "Right, I'll do the stairs." Well, I did the stairs. Oh, marvellous. I was home 5 days. And that was an extra day to do all the testing and recording for this. 4 years I've got to give. I'm in the research team for 4 years. And I was home on the fifth day. And the chaplain had the open heart. 3-4 weeks in hospital. Months before they're strong enough to do anything. Because, I mean, they had to break the chest bone, don't they? Go to the middle. So I put that down to the finest trade I had in the world.
What would a typical day of training involve?
Well, in a region,
yep.
Where you a typical day would be a talk on regimental history. We run that in very, very much. Like that, quite how the course started. You learn all that. You tested on it. Drill. Then you may have lectures and so forth. You would go up to another day. You go up to the barracks at Chatham. I've got the name there. It's not the Marine Barracks. You'd go up to another barracks there where they had all the guns there, and you do trip gun drill. And then you have talks on seamanship. You taught how to row, things like that. All the things you take. The drill was the main thing. Discipline, drill, 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 drill. That's where the discipline comes. And that, of course, keeps you fit. And then you do guard duties, of course, like we normally do, and you may have to cleaning up, you know, chores be done as well. But it's all planned out. But it's 9 months training, but by golly, when you pass out, aren't you proud, you know? It really is.
And the physical aspect of the training, how intense was that?
Well, I think it's very intense. Because do a lot of work in the gym as well, you know, at a gym, at your boxing. Do boxing, you really are. It's really tremendous training. I don't know whether the army is the same, but the corps is very, very tough. It has to be, I think. I mean, they're on call to any part of the world. That's the Marine's job, isn't it? More than the army. That's why they're spread all over the country, all over the world at the moment. Corps and Marines are either training troops and so forth abroad. No, it's a. I mean, some people fail, you know. I mean, some people drop out, they can't cope with it, too much for them. But then you're tested, medically tested, very closely. And if you don't get past that, you don't get anywhere at all, you're home, you go. And I passed the medical test as well. So I'm very lucky, really.
What now is your attitude towards the war as a whole?
What war?
The Second World War.
My attitude? Well, I think it was worthwhile doing. I think it had to be done. We were going to be attacked, weren't we? And we had to defend, full time. And, you know, there were mistakes made, I suppose. There always is, but as far as I was concerned, we had no trouble with our job. We had everything we had expected, all right. It was tough living on board there, but you accepted that. You couldn't expect a craft that big to have luxury accommodation as a warship would have, you know, compared. No, I think it was had to be there. And I think it was obviously worthwhile. It brought peace to a lot of countries, didn't it? Europe was peaceful now as it wasn't then. No, I think it had to be so. Germany were doing exactly what I think Iran is doing. They want, I'm sure Iran wants world domination, Islamic. Don't misunderstand me, I've got a lot of friends who are Islamic, but they are devout and they are excellent. My car man, I bought my cars from 25 years, I've dealt with him. And we're the greatest friends, and he's absolutely spot on. I mean, he tried his mosque day, you know. And great respect for everybody, and great respect for other people's religions. It's the other people who cause all the problem. The only thing I've got against Islam at the moment is that why aren't the leaders there being more strict? getting up and saying this has got to stop. You know, they're not, are they? This is going on in the mosques and everything else, which I think is terribly wrong. These chaps dragging these youngsters in into what, to become suicide bombers, that sort of thing. And that worries me, really. And is that, is Iran behind all this? Because they are an Islamic country, aren't they? Now, if they started getting like Germany, then I think we'd have to go to war or something. I hope it doesn't come, because the war now, what's going to be like now, is atom bombs and what have you.